Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I am Ben.
This is our first all-new show of the brand-new year, right?
That's right. Yes, sir. The rumors are true. This is our first episode of 2015. We're here with Noel Brown in the studio, and we've been doing some really big stuff. This has been a big year for us.
Oh, correct. Yeah, that's right. We went into reruns for what, just about a week and a half, 2 weeks, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Just to kind of get our bearings for the new year and get things kind of sorted out and ready to go. But I think we're going to hit the ground running with this one. So you want to hit him with the topic today, Ben?
Yeah, I would love to. We always hear toward the end and beginning of the year wrap up things, you know, like predictions, stories that did or didn't make the news, big moments in car history.
Sure.
But we're taking a different look today because, my friend, and this was your suggestion, we found the worst selling cars of 2014.
Yes. Now, okay. I don't know if you could pin this all on me, Ben. I mean, this is, cause this list has some problems that we're going to talk about, right? It's a list from Popular Mechanics, and it caught my eye because you normally see the best selling cars of 2014 or
right.
The best selling cars of the previous year or that month or whatever, right?
The award winners.
Always. And this is the worst selling cars of 2014. And, right away, we spotted some difficulties or some issues with this list
mm-hmm.
that we'll talk about maybe early on before we even get to the list, because I think, to be honest, we'll go through it kind of quick, but these are specific models from manufacturers, so it's not like the overall brand that sells poorly.
It's not like Mercedes in general.
No, but specific
Dodge.
Models from manufacturers, and we know that there are problems with this list, and a couple of them I'll just tell you right now is that some of these cars in this list are very low volume vehicles or limited production cars.
Right. Yeah.
And that weighs heavily into this. So, you know, it's not truly low sales in some cases. It's kind of exclusivity.
Yeah. This is something you and I have been talking about off the air earlier. As we're going to see in this list, there are some cars that are, they're listed in terms of absolute number of units sold. So mm-hmm. not a percentage of units, anything like that. Just the hard numbers per unit.
Now, see, that would give us a lot more perspective on the whole thing if there were overall production numbers listed as well.
Right. You see where I'm going with this?
I do.
Because in some cases, as we're going to find, a car with limited production is going to be portrayed as a worst selling car. But if you think about it, it pretty much sold out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's kind of the opposite is
it's
true.
It's like best-selling car.
Yeah, I guess you could say it that way, right? We've sold every single one of them. So there's a couple of other things, too. I mean, we mentioned that it might be better if you gave overall production numbers, too, so that there's kind of a perspective on this whole thing that, you know, you'd say, well, there were, 40,000 of these cars produced, but they only sold 2,500. So what's the problem? You know, why didn't people want them?
Right.
But those numbers aren't given here, and I tried to find production numbers, overall production numbers for these. I know they're out there. It's difficult. It's really difficult to dig through and find these for this. So we're going to go with this list as is, I guess, and just read through and see what you think and understand that, you know, we know the issues with it. Oh, one other thing that we should say is that cars that were only sold for a few months out of 2014, you know, when production started or ended in 2014, those are included as well.
Yeah.
So some are starting with kind of a handicap and saying that, well, it was only sold for the first 5 months of 2014, or it was only sold for the last 3 months of 2014. And this list goes through November. So, you know, it's not entirely accurate right down to the very last vehicle count, you know, because they probably likely sold a few more examples in December of 2014.
Yeah.
But all these disclaimers, Ben, I mean, I know it sounds like that's an awful lot, but it was just things that we noticed about this list right away. You know, that's something that someone may poke some holes in this list with and mm-hmm. say, that's not really the way it truly is. You guys should open your eyes a little bit and look at it in a different way.
We always know it's going to be a winner list when one of us says, hey, that was a great idea. And the other one says something like, well, hey, don't pin this on me.
Yeah, that's right. That was the start of the whole thing.
Right.
All right. So, you know, as we said, this comes from Popular Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
The information, the data comes from Automotive News. And again, it's through November of 2014. So it doesn't include December. but it was originally printed in Car and Driver. So this is a Car and Driver article, and there's a couple of extra notes in this that I'm going to include before we even start.
Okay.
And the Car and Driver intro is just a little bit different than the Popular Mechanics intro, so there's more information there. And they said that, again, it's all the way through November of 2014. So one thing they say is that exotic and boutique car makers are not broken out by individual models. So they gave them in a separate accounting, I guess, on the front page of this article. And it says the total U.S. sales for your consideration of these particular makes and models, I should say makes, really, because they don't give models for this one. But, for example, Lotus sold a total of 157 cars in the United States in all of 2014, all the way through November of 2014. So same for Lamborghini, 649 cars. Rolls-Royce was 825 cars. That's a total sales in the U.S., of all makes and models of Rolls-Royce.
Which is wild.
I'm sorry, all makes of Rolls. Yeah, models of Rolls-Royce. That's it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, we got there.
Yeah, and Aston Martin is like 1,122. Ferrari, I found the 2014 year-to-date total for Ferrari. That was 2,145 Ferraris sold in the United States in 2014.
And Lamborghini was
649.
That's interesting. I would have expected them to be a little bit more neck and neck.
And this is going somewhere, I'll tell you about
it. All right.
Yeah, I thought they would be close too, but it's a blow away for Ferrari. And then Bentley is 2,591 vehicles through November of 2014. Hmm. So, and here's the main point, I guess, is that combined, all these automakers account for approximately one car sold for every 366 GM products to leave the U.S. showroom floor in the first 11 months of 2014.
Wow.
So take that 7,269, multiply it by 366, you know, vehicles, units, I guess they call it in this case, and then you get roughly 2.66 million vehicles in 11 months that GM sold alone. That's just General Motors. That's
Holy
not
smokes.
The other manufacturers. So car sales are huge here in the United States. And we'll talk about 2015 projections and also overall 2014 numbers, which I have that we can include at the end as well.
Well, that sounds awesome. Let's jump right into it. We'll start with the Mercedes-Benz G-Class. Scott, how many units did that sell?
2,715 units, and this is number 13 on our list. So we're going to go down from here.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are going to get smaller. And the G-Class, I mean, this is a car that's been around for 36 years now, Ben. And it's been on kind of the edge of extinction, as they say it in this article. But there's a dedicated fan base that apparently is very wealthy that keeps bringing this thing back. Because I'll tell you, the MSRP on this, and I've done this for all these vehicles.
Yeah.
MSRP is between $115,400 all the way up to $141,000 if you get the AMG version. So every time you see one of those boxy Mercedes SUVs on the road, you know they at least spent, if they bought it new, at least $115,000 on that thing, if not more. I had no idea that they were that expensive. I really did.
The G-Wagen?
Yeah.
I knew they were going to be pricey just because of the brand's price point, but it's really startling when you see whenever a luxury company, car manufacturer, goes into SUVs, like the Lincoln Navigator, they're surprisingly expensive.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the mileage, I mean, you're not buying it for very practical purposes.
Right, really. I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, I think the horsepower range is from 382 all the way up to 536 is possible if you get the AMG version. And the other thing is that the mileage isn't all that great. I mean, the mileage, get this, it says up to 12 miles per gallon in the city. Up to, yeah. So that's kind of like, you know, the way the Hummer H2 was. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
Very, very low. And then 15 on the highway is about what you can expect. And this is, I said 36 years. This is one of the longest produced vehicles in Mercedes-Benz Daimler history.
Yeah.
36 years. The Unimog. Remember we talked about the Unimog?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A while back, a few years ago, I think.
Wow, yeah. That was a good show.
The Unimog is the only vehicle that Daimler has produced longer than the G-Class. And that was, I think the Unimog has been around since about 1951.
Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing, I think, about the G-Class or the G-Wagen is that it has been continually updated over its time. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Bug or the Beetle was pretty much just the same car for a while.
Sure.
And, you know, when it had its big resurgence and its big update, it turned a lot of heads, but people have been continually improving upon the Mercedes-Benz, G-Class, and it definitely has a reputation for luxury. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, the Shah of Iran was involved in making the military version of this that existed beforehand.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that, but I could picture a Shah in one of these.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a great Top Gear quote. And listeners, you guys know Scott and I love Top Gear. They said about the, G63, they called it one of the worst cars you can buy right now.
Oh my gosh.
And they said that unlike, say, a Land Rover Defender or even the off-road capable big tired 6x6 version, this has no purpose in life other than annoying us poor people.
Oh man, that's pretty harsh.
Well, it seems like it's a divisive car.
I guess so. You know what? We can move on to number 12 if you're ready.
Yeah.
And I think we can kind of step through these maybe a little faster than that. I just happen to have a bunch of notes on the G-Wagon. It's an interesting vehicle, but,
right.
You know, a few we'll stop at a little longer. Others we'll kind of skim over. So number 12 on the list is the Infiniti QX50.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold 2,503 units in, the first 11 months of 2014. That doesn't sound all that bad really to me.
No, it's interesting too because it's a crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it's an entry level crossover.
Yes.
And that's surprising to me because when you say an entry level crossover, because that is a hot market right now. People want crossover vehicles. Mm-hmm. They still want SUVs and trucks, as we'll find out. Because when I get to these 2014 overall totals, it's very telling what people bought here in the United States.
Oh yeah. I bet
and
I can guess why too.
So this is entry level. All right, so we're talking an MSRP of like between $35,000 all the way up to about $38,000 or $39,000. And I would think that an entry-level crossover of this brand in particular, because this is Infiniti, this is like the luxury division of Nissan.
Right, yeah.
So you would think that something priced that attractively and that type of package, you know, it's exactly what the people are buying right now, the crossover vehicles, you would think that it would be a huge seller for them.
Well, it was formerly known as the EX, right?
Yeah.
And, they shuffled the name around in 2013. Sales of the model are, increasing, right?
Yeah. It's on the right track.
It's weird though, because that number, which again, as we said, doesn't count December, that number of 2,503 units is 34% higher than it was last year.
Wow. So it's doing very well, actually.
So right.
It's deceptive that it's on this list. I mean, it comes in at number 12, which was kind of high, I guess, but, depending on how you look at the list, I suppose.
Right.
And as you mentioned, you know, the switchover here, the nomenclature switchover in 2013, right?
Yeah.
Late 2013 for the 2014 model year. Well, in 2014, Infiniti changed the model names across its entire lineup. So that's kind of changed things up. It confused a lot of people.
Right. Is this the same car?
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Asking themselves.
Exactly right. So the 2014 sedans, you now use the Q prefix, with the exception of the G sedans, which is its own series of sedans.
Right.
And then the 2014 crossovers and SUVs now use the QX prefix, just like the one we just talked about, the QX50. So changing that up, it makes people confused and, you know, pull out their hair trying to figure out which vehicle's which, but, I think you talk to the dealer, you'll understand.
Number 11.
Yes, number 11. Now this one, this is exciting, Ben. Sort of.
Yeah. The Chevrolet SS coming in at number 11 on our list with 2,386 units. Scott, I just want to read this first sentence verbatim.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. Perfected in an era when run and shine was still conceivably a line you might put on a resume, the formula of combining a big V8 with a four-door crap can reached its pinnacle with the Chevrolet SS.
Ah, but then they go on to say that this is anything but a crap can. Because, and that's important to say that it's not a crap can. It's actually a very nimble vehicle.
Yeah, it handles really well.
It stops, turns, goes fast, does everything that it should, right? This is a car, and you know what? Let's just point this out up front. This is a car that is an Australian car.
Yep.
It's a Holden vehicle. It's the same thing as the Holden VF Commodore sedan that sold over in Australia. And I make that point because this kind of, in the United States here, is a bit like the replacement for the G8 sedan that Pontiac had.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that going for just a short amount of time before Pontiac, of course, went under. The brand is now defunct.
Right.
So, and that was also a vehicle that was built by Holden as well in Australia. So, I think it's important to get that out there. It's an expensive car. It's 45,000 up to about $48,000 if you get extra options on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful sedan. It's a V8, 6.2 liter V8 engine, 415 horsepower in this sedan. I'll tell you, Ben, when I said it's sort of exciting, I guess, I mean, it must be a blast to drive. I bet it would be a lot of fun. But looking at the photos, now I know the photo we see right here, it's on a racetrack. It looks like it has a body kit of some kind on it.
Yeah.
Looks very cool.
I mean, they're pretty big in racing. There's, the International V8 Supercars Championship has, some teams running Holdens and Commodores.
All right. So I understand it's a powerful, fun, fast car to drive. I get all that. But when I look at photos of these things on the streets, like, you know, when people submit photos, not the manufacturer photos.
Right.
Not the photos that are taken on the racetrack like this one that we're looking at.
But, like, look what I saw.
Yeah, I saw this on the street here in, Royal Oak, Michigan or wherever. When I see that photo, I'm not really that blown away by this thing. But but it's kind of, again, a wolf in sheep's clothing, right?
Yeah, it is true. It's it reminds me a bit of, well, maybe not so much with the body kit, but without a body kit, just stock, it reminds me a bit of a sleeper car.
And I can't even say that it's a body kit. I know that they're tricky about the way they shoot these things. It's just the right angle. It's just the right it's the right color of vehicle. It's in the right setting. I know that. I know I'm being fooled by this photo. I've seen others that look pretty similar to it, but I think there's some modification going on there. Mm. It's a cool looking vehicle in some cases, but in other cases, I'm not really all that that blown away by it. But I would love to drive a sedan with 415 horsepower. Don't get
Are
me
you
wrong.
Kidding? Yeah, I would love to drive it up to the moment I got arrested,
which would probably be nearly immediately.
Pretty soon, yeah. I might make it to the interstate, and if I do, then it's over. Our next car. However, speaking of, this is interesting. So I'll do the list and the number, but then I have a tangentially related thing that I think you'll find interesting.
Got it.
All right. So how many times can I say interesting in a sentence, right?
Well, I don't know. Was that three or four?
I think I'm batting six. So our next vehicle is the BMW Z4. And how many units did that sell?
1,983.
So we're getting smaller. We're into the sub 2000 units. This is fascinating, Scott. A UC Berkeley study a few years back found that, they were studying the relationship between wealth and driving, and, you know, what kind of driver you were on the road.
Okay.
So they did this experiment where they would have a pedestrian on the curb about to walk and then walk out into the street at a crosswalk. So it's not jaywalking, and they would have somebody watching and note the car that someone was driving and how they behaved.
Hmm.
And what they found is that people who had nicer cars were like four times less likely to stop for a pedestrian. And they were also, there were a couple other like traffic rules they would violate.
So you're talking like luxury brands like Mercedes, mm-hmm. BMW, et cetera.
And they also found that there was one type of car that was head and shoulders above the rest in bad drivers.
Oh, boy.
And it was BMW.
It was BMW. You know what? I bet a lot of people could have guessed that right when you started talking about this. I know it's a terrible stereotype, but unfortunately, for all the others out there that drive BMWs, there's mm-hmm. there's the other group of BMW drivers that are kind of jerks on the road. And I know that other people notice that as well. I mean, clearly that study is, I mean, they're kind of leaning that way. They can't, I don't know how they can say for sure that group of drivers are the ones that, I'm having trouble with the data.
The methodology.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to investigate that a little deeper.
Yeah, I think they were making some leaps, but if they're just ticking off, you know, oh, this car comes through here and this, well, probably, that's the thing, Scott. It probably wasn't a BMW Z4 because they didn't sell that many.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. And this is kind of a different bird here, right? I mean, this is a different vehicle, but there's some bad news about this, too. And I mean, it was just in the short little paragraph about this. The guy, his name is Ian Robertson. He's the BMW sales chief. And he says that the market is roughly half of what it used to be for sports car sales in the U.S. and in Europe. So half of what it used to be. Can you believe that? He said post 2008, it just collapsed. He says, I'm not even sure if it'll ever fully recover. So we may see lower and lower numbers on these things in the future. As we said, you know, just under 2000 units were sold here in the United States of the Z4. And that's a little bit, surprising. I mean, I see a bunch of these on the road.
It might be just the area we live in? Because I feel like I see a lot of Z4s here in Buckhead.
Could be. And we could also be seeing 2013 models.
That's a very good point.
It doesn't have to all be 2014. So, but they're kind of expensive. I mean, between $49,000 and all the way up to about almost $66,000 if you get the S-Drive 35IS model.
Mm-hmm.
So, it can be pricey. Kind of depends on the options and the exact model that you choose. But, that's too bad. I would hate to see cars like this go away.
Yeah, I really like the shape of this car. I like the style of it. And you notice it, you know? Mm-hmm. And say what you will with stereotypes about BMW drivers, but I love BMWs.
Well, I do too. And I would, truthfully, I would drive one today if I could. If I had the opportunity to buy one and it was, you know, the right car for me and all that.
Yeah.
I love BMWs. I think they're a fantastic car.
Have you been combing through Craigslist?
Secretly, yes, I have. for all kinds of things, but occasionally I'll search the BMWs, yes. Yeah.
So speaking of the complete opposite of good-looking cars, next on our list is the Scion IQ. Yeah, I said it.
What?
I don't like it.
No, are you kidding?
It looks, man, it's...
I thought, you know, you and I, we have the hatchback thing. We like the hatchback cars, right? This, to me, is a really cool design.
It's not doing it for me. To be frank with you, and this is just my opinion, Scion in general, I just don't agree with their design choices.
I don't even know who you are right now. I really thought that we were going to be on the same page with this one because I like the Scion IQ. And this one sold just slightly fewer than Z4. It sold 1,953 units in the first 11 months of 2014.
Yeah.
And it's a low price vehicle. It's about $15,665. That's the MSRP.
Mm-hmm.
I really do like this car. Now, the thing about it is, though, I like this car. I like it in its stock form. It's fine.
Sure.
But I really like this car when you see, like, you know, the cars that they bring to the SEMA show. You know, when they lower them a little bit, they put wide tires on them, a little, you know, maybe a wide body kit.
Uh-huh.
They darken the windows. It's a much better looking vehicle. I think it's got a lot of potential for customization.
Okay.
And I think it looks really cool. Of course, the engine will require some effort as well because, right now it only has a 1.3 liter four cylinder engine that has less than 100 horsepower. Now it's a tiny car, so it doesn't really need a lot more than that. But,
right. It's a subcompact.
Yeah, this is the car. I mean, it makes the Smart for Two look big when it's parked next to it.
That's what it is. It's like the back third of the car is missing.
Really?
That's what it looks like to you? It feels like it ends abruptly. I mean, I get it if you're doing, city driving, right? You live in an urban area,
yeah.
Then you need to be able to park, and that's an advantage, but, I'm just not sold on it, man.
I mean, it's basically a city car, really, because,
yeah.
You know, here in the United States, we use it as like a commuter car, I guess, because it has two seats up front, of course, and it has a third seat in the back, one that can accommodate an adult for short distances is how they put it in the,
right,
in the marketing
yeah,
info,
yeah.
Right? And a four seat that can hold a child. So they don't even say that it can hold four adults or anything like that. They just say, it has a third seat in the back for short distances.
And if that's what you like, then that's fine. I've got to point out as well, this is somewhat better known to some people as the Aston Martin Signet.
Ah, yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
They branded the Aston Martin with, the Scion with the Aston Martin badge and some upgraded features, right?
Yeah, and they did it so that Aston Martin can comply with the EU emission standards.
That's a dirty little trick, isn't it? That's what it is. And it's expensive too. I don't remember the price on the Signet, but, oh boy. Anyways.
They also had really low sales. I think before they stopped producing it in 2012, maybe?
The Signet?
No, 2013.
Okay.
Yeah. In September 2013, they stopped producing it and their annual sales were like 150 units.
I've never seen one on the road.
They weren't sold in the U.S.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. And,
yeah.
So I likely never will.
Hey, we can take a field trip to London.
All right. So number eight, the Jaguar XK. How many units sold, Ben?
1,364. Mm-hmm. 1,364.
Yeah. Now we're talking about the second generation of XK models, between 2006 and 2014.
Mm-hmm.
That's the body style that we're talking about. And, well, actually, you know what? This is one of those ones that we need to I guess, put a an asterisk on.
Yes.
I don't think we did that on the Chevy SS, now that I think about it.
Let me didn't, and that's very important. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the reasons that the Chevy SS got robbed and put on this list is because it was on sale for just a few months.
Yes, and that's the exact same case with the Jaguar XK. The last XK came off the assembly line, I think it was around July of 2014. So really for only the first, 7 months?
Yeah.
Only the first 7 months they were producing the car. So, again, that's one of the difficulties with this list is that, it's only in there for 7 months. Can you really score it according to the other vehicles that were on sale for 12 months? Not really, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not an even comparison.
They're expensive. It's $84,500 for the coupe and $90,000 for the convertible version. The F-Type, I guess, the F-Type Jaguar is the replacement for this vehicle. So,
right.
Is it almost, I guess you can't even do it that way. I would say, is it fair to take, the F-Type sales
and add the numbers?
Yeah, but you can't really do that because it's a different car. So
I don't know, man.
Yeah. You know what? Can I tell you something interesting about this that I read?
Yeah.
This is a tangential side note on this vehicle, if anything. I mean, it's a crazy one. Okay. So the Jag's chief designer, his name is Ian Callum, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said that, and this is back when he was revealing this vehicle at, I want to say the Geneva show in 2005, he said this. He said that his inspiration for the second generation XK, which is the body we're talking about, the inspiration for the XK came from his, and I'll quote this, admiration for British actress Kate Winslet's curves. So this body style has been inspired by actress Kate Winslet.
Weird.
Yeah, isn't that strange? Now, I mean, and the grill came from the 1961 Jaguar E-Type, but who cares about that, right? So we're talking about Kate Winslet's body shape is what was the inspiration for the second gen XK model from Jaguar. How weird is that?
It's so weird.
I know, it's a strange side note, but I guess it's true. I mean, I haven't really dug into it more than just the one account that I found of this thing, so I'm going to have to look into it, but.
Does Kate Winslet know?
I would guess she does. I
mean, has anyone told her?
It seems like something like that would make the rounds and get to her,
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Now, we're a family show, so before we go any further, let's move to the next item on our list, the Nissan GT-R.
Now, I have very little to say about this one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sold 1,280 units last year.
Yeah.
And the reason I have very little to say about it is because we did a two-part podcast on this last year.
We did.
Yeah, we did a two-part GTR podcast. I think it was around March of 2014 that we did that. If you want all the information you could ever get about the Nissan GTR, it's all right there. This is number 7 on our list. Again, 1,280 units. That's not a whole lot, but it's expensive. It's between $101,000, roughly $102,000, up to about $150,000 if you get the Nismo version. So it's a pricey vehicle, very cool. We see a bunch of these around town, around here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be a very popular car here as far as, like, if you're going to buy a supercar. So anyways, we've got this this podcast from March of last year. If you want to know all about it, go there.
And it has all that you wanted to know and more.
Yes, I would say so. Probably more.
More than you want to know.
Probably more.
Yeah. So next on our list, then, we're breezing through this one, the Kia K900.
Yeah, this is a strange vehicle, isn't it? Probably a lot of people have never seen a Kia K900, and there's maybe a good reason. First point reason is that only 1,237 units were sold last year in the United States. Maybe they're more popular elsewhere, I don't know. But the thing is about the K900, and a lot of people don't even know about this model, it's a nearly $60,000 Kia. And that's the problem, I think. I think that's the biggest issue here, a $60,000 Kia. And you can get a base version, the premium version, they call it, for $54,500. But if you get the luxury version, it's $59,900. And even though it's loaded with comfort and luxury features and gadgets and all that stuff, it's not really what they call a well-handling car. It's not a good road-going car. It's got all the luxury features and it's, soft where it's supposed to be soft. But, as far as competing with the vehicles in that class, I guess, like the BMWs and the Mercedes.
Yeah.
It doesn't really keep up as far as a driver's car goes.
And it's weird when a company is known for creating a certain type of car or price point. It's always strange and risky to move away from that. Like luxury car makers. get just murdered. People heap criticism upon them for making a supercar that's a little bit too cheap.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we talked about BMW, you know, just a moment ago, but that's a that's a driver's car. The Mercedes, yeah. When you get up to that level, those are driver's cars. Those are cars that have good road feel and they're crisp, they're nimble, mm-hmm. they're all that stuff, right? From what I've heard, and I've never driven one, the Kia K900 is not that way. I mean, it's full of luxury and all that stuff that I mentioned before, but, it's just not good competition in that price range for those vehicles. Now, I know the German cars are going to be a bit more expensive. They're just a lot costlier for the same type of vehicle with the same features.
Right.
But they're much better driving vehicles. So the driver will appreciate it a lot more on a long trip.
So let's talk about the next one. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this one, man.
Okay.
The Cadillac ELR. Yeah,
sold just 1,192 units in 2014, the first 11 months. I'll tell you, I like the looks of it. I think it's a good looking car.
Right.
But I'm not a fan of the price, I'll tell you that.
Yes. Yeah. What's that price?
The price is about, MSRP is about $75,000. And essentially what you're getting here, I mean, I just want to be outright with this.
Be candid, yeah.
It's a Volt with a Cadillac body.
Yeah.
It's a Chevy Volt.
And it's more than $40,000.
Yeah, because the Volt, the Volt has the MSRP of around about $35,000, a little bit less. This is $75,000 for the Cadillac ELR. Now, I know that gets you loads of extra features, luxury features.
Sure.
And, you know, the body style that you want and the Cadillac name and, of course, everybody knows you're going to pay more for the premium brand. I get all that, right?
Yeah.
I understand. It's really a beautiful car, in my opinion. But it's very similar to the, almost exactly identical to the ATS coupe or the CTS coupe body design. And those are, you know, the MSRP for those are around, between $37,000, $39,000, something like that for a Cadillac that looks similar. And I think that, you know, again, I just feel that like that's just the way to go right now. I don't think that I'm on board yet enough to go with an all electric Cadillac.
But is it really a Cadillac? See, that's where I keep going back to. Like, is it a Cadillac just because you put a different body on it?
I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me like maybe people just don't want this car. Like they just don't want to pay $75,000 for a Cadillac that's electric when they can get the same thing from the Chevy Volt. You know, it would be somebody who's really, interested in labels, you know, somebody who loves to say that they've got the latest and greatest technology, somebody that feels they need the luxury of the Cadillac, but they want to be kind of responsible and have the hybrid. I understand all that. I get it. But that seems to be the person that's for. I think if somebody were to really, you know, if they don't care about all that other stuff, I think they're either going to go for the Chevy Volt, which is much, much less,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to go for the gasoline, Cadillac,
right.
You know, either the ATS coupe or the CTS coupe, which is considerably less money. I mean, $35,000 less in some cases. I mean, that's a big difference.
So speaking of a big difference, as we move on, we're going to have a combo for you guys. We have two cars from the same manufacturer that both made the list.
Well, wait a second, though. You didn't tell me what you think of the ELR. The Cadillac ELR.
All right. I know I sound very negative in the episode today, but guys, this is going to be my second time shooting down a car. I don't like the ELR. I'm okay with the Chevy Volt, but don't put a Chevy Volt in Cadillac clothing and try to sell it to me as though it is a Cadillac.
Yeah.
And also, what do Cadillac buyers actually want? Because it's probably not a Chevy Volt.
Now, manufacturers do this all the time with platform
sharing
and all that stuff. I mean, that was big. Remember that started when was it the 80s, I think?
Yeah.
And it's kind of been going on since then. So I understand why they do that. I understand, you know, the need to do that to make it affordable for them. I get it.
Right, yeah.
But you're right. Why not make it, a step above? Make an alteration to it somehow so that it does say Cadillac versus the Chevy Volt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe it better than that, but you're right. It seems to need some more differentiation between the Chevrolet Volt and the Cadillac.
Spot on. Differentiation is a good word. So that's the reason I don't care for it, because it seems like just the same phone with a different phone case.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
I think we're beating a dead horse. Let's move on to the twofer, as you mentioned here, right?
Yes. Yes.
Number four is the Audi TT, and they sold
1,146 units.
Yes. Now, there's probably a very good reason for that. And I think here's exactly why the sales were a little bit slower for the TT in 2014. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's got to be because of the third generation TT that's going to be coming out, I think, in 2015.
I had 2016.
Oh, 2016.
Is when you can actually buy it.
Ah, okay. So 2016. Okay, got it.
Yeah, and this is interesting. It makes sense if you think about it, because, of course, if you're about to drop how much on an Audi TT?
Between $40,000 and $43,000 right now.
If you're going to spend that much money, then you don't want to buy something that will become an older generation car very quickly.
Yeah, because it'll look old almost immediately because, you know, compared to the new one. That's totally understandable. And the thing is, though, it's been a hot seller for Audi for a long, long time. I mean,
yeah.
since the vehicle debuted, and I don't remember exactly when that was. I wish I could remember. But it has sold, the TT has sold more than 500,000 copies, of the coupe and the convertible since the first generation debuted. So, it's been a great seller.
1998.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's a big seller for Audi,
yeah.
And I think it will continue to be that way. This one particular year, the reason it landed on this list, I believe, is simply because that third generation is coming out and people know about it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. After that, I think we're going to see a big jump in sales.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. So here's the second one on the list from Audi. And this comes in at number three, so even less units than that, Audi R8.
And this is a heck of a drop, 671 units.
Yeah, it goes way down here, right? 671 units now, but this is a supercar.
Yeah,
it's a very specialized vehicle. Yeah, it's a V8 or V10 powered vehicle. It's got a 7-speed automatic or, you know, a 6-speed manual. It has a gated shifter. If you get that manual transmission, that's really cool. 550 horsepower V10 plus version is available,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really cool. And that was brand new for 2014. So that may have to do with, you know, some of these sales, I would guess.
Right.
But you know, I don't know. This just seems like one of those cars that, like, well, of course there's only 671 sold. It's a very exclusive model.
It's in the rarefied area.
Yeah. It's expensive. It's between, if you get the coupe, it's 116,000. If you get the convertible, it's nearly $130,000 for this car. I mean, it's expensive. It's not meant to be a high volume vehicle for Audi. And
exactly.
I mean, that's why it's on this list. I understand, but can you really call it one of the worst selling cars? I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah. It all goes back to the metric and the way that you just measure in absolute numbers. I mean, we're going to see that more and more in our next two.
Well, definitely. Yeah. So we get down to, you know, these top three here, I think, are definitely that case. These are not exactly boutique cars, but they're very low production vehicles. So number two on our list is the 2015 Dodge Viper SRT. And that's 2015 model year, sold in 2014. 671 units here.
Yeah, 671. The same number as the Audi R8.
Mm-hmm.
The Viper, though, is – I'm a big fan of Vipers.
I am, too.
Yeah, these are great machines. V10 engine, and it had really bad sales or really slow sales from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they fixed that, right? They decided, okay, remember they launched this brand new vehicle and it was the SRT branded vehicle and we're not really Dodge anymore, but we're the SRT brand. And there was this whole marketing. I don't know if it's really marketing. It was just they were trying to separate that division from the other part of I guess it would be Fiat now, right?
Yes.
So, okay, this is kind of strange to think of it as Fiat, but right when it first came out, they had a really high price, but then they chopped $15,000 off the price, and that kind of gave them a resurgence. It allowed them to sell many more of these, and so I think that, you know, we're going to see maybe an increase in sales for next year. I mean, above the 671 that we saw for the first 11 months.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, these are amazing cars, and it's right around $85,000 is what you'll pay for this. Again, a limited volume car, very, very low volume, 640 horsepower. You mentioned a V10 engine, right?
Right.
Very, very strong. It's just it's a great car. I think we've talked about these at length on our podcast before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There's just so many cool things about this. I mean, there's a million footnotes we could talk about the Viper, but maybe today is not the day. So so let's move on to our number one car on this list, and then we'll talk about the 2014 overall sales and a couple of predictions for 2015.
Couple of predictions,
and
yeah.
And then we'll wrap it up. But number one on this list, this is going to be a shocker for a lot of people, I think.
I think so, too.
The Porsche 918 Spyder, they sold just 57 units here in the United States last year in the first 11 months.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe the most deceptive number of them all.
Yeah, this is not your grandmother's Oldsmobile. It has 887 horsepower, 944 pound-feet of torque. It's got that mid-mounted V8 and a pair of electric motors.
Okay. So it's an unusual vehicle, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And we've talked about the materials that this thing's made of, the carbon fiber reinforced plastic. And
yeah.
It's an incredible vehicle. It's amazing, but it's very, very low production numbers. 918 of these cars will be built and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's done after 918. And so when we say that 57 were sold last year, that's very deceptive because the entire production is sold out. I mean, every car that they have made or will make, and you know what? I've got the production here. As it turns out, we're going to receive here in the United States a total of about 297 of those 918 cars when it's all said and done.
Uh-huh.
And the production of these things, this is kind of strange a little bit. It goes from 2013 to 2014 as the model year 2013 Porsche 918 Spyder. So, I think the way this is working, even if you buy it in 2014, it's still considered a 2013 model year.
Huh.
I believe. Now, I think that's the way it's going. I'm not exactly sure about that. But production did begin in 2013, in September 2013. Deliveries began around December of 2013. And then as of December 2014, so just one month ago.
Right.
All of the production was sold out. So it's a very good selling vehicle. It's not really the worst selling vehicle. It's maybe the best-selling vehicle,
yeah.
If you want to look at it that way,
yeah.
Right?
As we said, and it's, you guys, this thing is so cool because when we were shooting some videos, we got a chance to see the Porsche 918 up close and personal.
Yeah, the prototype, the concept.
The original concept car.
It's pretty cool. It was really amazing to be there, and it's striking in person. It's much better to see it in person than to see any photo of it. It's incredible. If you get a chance to be near one or you see one at a show or it's on exhibit at some museum, definitely go to take a look at it. I'd love to hear one, you know, start up and drive and run. Of course, I'd like to, you know, ride one or drive one. But,
sure.
Just to even hear it, I think would be remarkable in person, you know. I don't know if I'll ever have that chance. Maybe we will.
Maybe. Never say never.
I guess so. I mean, it's an expensive car. It's $845,000. That's where it starts at. That's starting MSRP.
That's basic. That's without the radio.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you look at it that way, okay, it's nearly $1 million, nearly $1 million. They're going to make 918 of them. And people said, yeah, I'll write that check ahead of time to you. Just send it when it's ready. I mean, that's pretty remarkable that they've sold all of them ahead of time. I know that a lot of cars like this sell out ahead of production, even before they're even built.
Yeah.
So again, I think this is maybe the best-selling car, which, you know, is pegged as being the worst-selling car, but I understand where they're going here. It only sold 57 units here in the U.S. in 2014.
So now let's look at something much bigger. So those are the 13, arguably, worst-selling cars of 2014.
Sure.
But what were the overall sales numbers of 2014?
In the U.S., and this is actually really good news, and I'll keep it kind of brief because I know we're going to wrap up here pretty soon, but U.S. sales of cars and light trucks totaled 16.52 million. This is amazing. This is for all of 2014. This is including December. This is the first time they've crossed the 16 million mark since 2006, Ben. So car sales are way up. This is new car sales. That's nearly 1 million more sales than there were in 2013. So, you know, these are brand new numbers. These came out just, I believe, January 5th of this year. So car sales are on the rise here in the U.S., and it seems like they're going to be going up because the 2015 predictions say that, you know, analysts are looking at the end of 2014 and saying for 2015, the predictions, they anticipate sales of around 17 million vehicles this year in the United States, brand new vehicles. So, there's lots of room to grow here. Pretty cool. And if you want to break these down, just this kind of the last little thing that I have here. So among this year's highlights, if you want to kind of put it that way,
sure.
The trucks, including SUVs, outsold cars, As they typically do. I think that's always the case, right? Because usually that Ford F-150 is on top, right? But together, the sales in this category rose about 10%. So truck sales and SUV sales in the U.S. last year were something like 8.6 million vehicles.
Wow.
That's just a rounded number. And if you separate out the SUVs and the crossover vehicles, those sales were up as well. The SUVs and crossovers, this was getting back to, remember that Infiniti that we talked about? And
right,
it's
yeah.
Kind of a hot market. Mm-hmm. The crossover and SUV vehicles are 5,381,431 vehicles. That's a huge number.
And we could speak a little bit to that as well. The rising popularity of pickup trucks and SUVs, or maybe it's better to call it a resurgence, mm-hmm. Is almost completely due to falling oil prices.
Really? Do you think so? Now, okay, I've got another opinion on this whole thing. I think that the people from the U.S., the U.S. citizens, I think they just love trucks and SUVs. I really do.
That's totally part of it. But now it also feels like it's less of a bad decision. Like the people who were driving Hummers were kicking themselves
sure.
when gas prices shot through the roof. But now people feel like it's okay to buy that very thirsty truck that you want.
Yeah, we're a fickle bunch, aren't we? I mean, it's funny because like, you know, these could take a turn next month and then you're back in the same place, right? I mean, you're still paying for a vehicle that's only getting 12 miles per gallon or less or whatever it is. But I think that, you know, U.S. citizens just love trucks, and there's a good reason for this. I mean, remember the Ford F-150 that we talked about?
Oh, yeah.
That was, of course, one of the top three best-selling vehicles, in the U.S. this year. And in fact, all of the top three were all American trucks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a Ford, there's the F-150.
Yeah.
There's GM Silverado, which is another pickup. And then the Dodge Ram 1500.
So, I knew the Ram was it.
I mean, it's the top three selling vehicles. And then, you know, I guess another couple things we can just mention here is GM sold more vehicles in 2014 than any other automaker. Ford was also the best-selling brand for the fifth straight year, and the Dearborn automaker's F-150 pickup was the best-selling truck for the 38th straight year.
Which is crazy.
38-year run for the Ford F-150, and the Toyota Camry was the nation's best-selling car for the 13th consecutive year. So the Camry is still up there at number one, and that, again, was for, what did I say? That was the 13th year for that
mm-hmm.
one. Incredible. I've got far more numbers. I mean, these can be broken down in a bunch of different ways.
Sure. Like type of car,
yeah.
year, generation.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's so many ways to look at this stuff. I mean, it's really pretty fascinating when you dig into it. And some of the numbers are a little tough to get early on in the year like this. You know, mm-hmm. later we'll learn a little bit more about 2014 and what really happened. But you know, these are decent numbers, I guess. I got these from the Detroit News, by the way. And I think maybe they got them from the Automotive News. I'm not sure exactly what their source was, but again, I went to the Detroit News and found all that stuff. So you can look that up if you like, and see how they broke it down. It's really pretty interesting.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The 13 worst selling cars of 2014 in the United States. Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump on you.
Oh,
there,
no, we need all the asterisks we can get.
I think
we
need extras on that, mm-hmm. as we pointed out ahead of time.
It's like the label on Kool-Aid. Have you ever read the ingredients in Kool-Aid?
I haven't in a long, long time.
They have to make different symbols. So there's like an asterisk for one thing and then a tiny little cross for something mm-hmm. else. It's like that. But we hope you enjoyed this, and we also hope you enjoy the very first listener email of 2015.
Ah, yay.
Well, you know this guy. You've been talking to this guy for a while.
Okay.
So Stephen L. wrote to us, and he had a very interesting thing to say. The subject line is bang, WTF.
Ah, yes.
All caps.
Now I remember.
So Stephen has a bit of a bone to pick with us. He says, I can't believe no one mentioned it before. Please don't bang on the table. I think that's what you're doing, because when you get excited about something or making a firm point, it happens, but it makes my whole car shake like something just hit it or something's blown. It freaks me out, and it happens to other cars, so it's not just the speaker in that vehicle. And then he says, you know, keep up the good work. Thanks to the podcast, they make Journey to Work more bearable. Now, you wrote to Stephen. We
did.
Both did.
Several
actually.
Times.
Yeah. You continue to correspondence.
Well,
yeah.
We had a back and forth because I was really concerned about this. I thought maybe that we were, you know, smacking the table inadvertently or something like that. But I know that we don't really do that. We're not, you know, like we're standing at a podium and pounding our fist to emphasize a point or anything. So I was trying to really dig into this and figure out what was going on, if it was an audio file problem or if there was an upload issue or if it was just, the equipment that he's using or whatever. I think we determined that it's probably he's got some giant subwoofers in his car, and it's likely what's going on, because he even mentioned that, when he listens to it on his phone or, some other device, a laptop or whatever, the tiny little speakers, they don't really have this issue. But when he gets in his car, or not just that one car, but other cars as well, there's this bang that he says it's almost as if his tire is blown out or something.
And we appreciate when someone hips us to this. I had this picture, this image in my head of this bang WTF moment, mm-hmm. And apologies, Stephen. Thanks for your patience. We are working on being less, what would you say?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how to even.
I don't know if I really slam on the table. I know I have a few times.
Yeah, we may move a pen or something that knocks around, but we'll try to catch that stuff in the future. Sorry about that, and hopefully it wasn't an issue for other listeners as well. If it was, turn down the bass a little bit.
So, happy turn down for what? I'm sorry, I'm obligated to say that. Happy New Year, everybody. Let us know what you would like to hear more about in the future. We are heading out for today, but you can still find us anytime you want on the internet, where we are CarStuffHSW on Twitter, on Facebook. We have our own website. We're doing videos now.
Oh, yeah, lots of videos.
Mm-hmm. And we would love to hear from you. So send us an email. Our address is
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.